Hello and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie and I'm joined for, I think, the third time by Ryan, who's talking about his recently launched independent mobile game, which is titled Carrier Commander. We've recorded several previous podcasts kind of chronicling the development process of this mobile game, which is now fully launched on both iOS and Google Play. And today we're talking about the launch of the game specifically, or sort of the second launch of the game, which is to say the game has gone through sort of a transition from one launch to the next. Welcome.
Thanks. I think this podcast you might refer to as a post-mortem. Are you familiar with that term?
Yeah, those are great. Gama Sutra does a lot of those. GDC does a lot of those.
Right, so this is going to be kind of a post-mortem on my game, focusing on the release of the game twice. The first time as a premium game, and then about 2 months later as a free-to-play game, and kind of comparing the data from both.
For people who aren't familiar, can you describe what a post-mortem is?
So it sounds kind of negative, because the game's not dead, just letting you know. But when you say it in the game dev community, it means like we're going to look back at the game and kind of in retrospect see what we could have done better, what we did great. You know, hindsight's 20/20, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the last time I think we talked about this game was just before it had fully launched on mobile. I think the Android beta was available, if I'm not mistaken. And at the time, we were kind of theorizing about what would happen when you launch it. And the launch is such an important event for any game. And there's a lot of hopes and expectations and sort of experimentation involved. You try to market the game in certain ways. You prepare the app icon, the description, the video, all the things which we talked about in the previous podcast. And now we have the benefit of looking back on the efficacy of all those efforts.
Right. You know, just personally, I like premium games because I don't like being advertised to in the game. So I released the game initially as a premium game. But
what was the cost of the game when it launched?
$3.
Mm-hmm. $2.99?
Yeah, $2.99. And then, you know, after it launched, and I think I waited about 2 months, and I looked at the data, and I said, all right, let's try this again as a free-to-play game. Because even though, you know, maybe that's not my personal favorite game, the fact is that free-to-play titles have accounted for 80% of all spending on digital games in 2018. It's just the dominant model. It's the best way to make money with a game.
Right. So how has your opinion changed between, you know, prior to launch and now? So you launched the game, you wanted to stick by your principles, you wanted to, you know, do what you would prefer to do as a gamer, you would prefer to just pay. What changed through that process? You launched the game, and can you describe the steps or the sequence of changing your point of view on this?
Yeah, you know, I think probably one of the worst parts about a premium game is that you are excluding so many potential players from ever joining your player base. Like, just the exposure you get from making your game free and having thousands and thousands of people playing your game is rewarding in its own, even if you don't monetize those players. I mean, that kind of increases your fame, I guess, as a developer. People know your game because people are playing it. And as a premium game, yeah, maybe you make money off your players, but how many players are there? Unless you're a big name, unless, you know, you are, what, EA or something, and people want to download your game, nobody's heard of me. I'm
right.
An indie developer.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially when, you know, in your case, it was kind of, is it fair to describe as a passion project? So it does make a lot of sense that you would be looking for sort of goodwill from a player base that appreciates what you're doing, and that can be really gratifying, not in terms of, you know, you're necessarily getting paid from everyone who downloads your game, but you do have a feeling that you've contributed to the better good. And some people are going to be happy to make purchases. So that's a bonus as well. But overall, it does seem like more of a win.
Yeah. You know, even just kind of like the reactions I got in the community as I launched the game, I do a lot of my promotion on Reddit. People upvote the crap out of free stuff because they appreciate that there's a free game that they can play. Whereas people are a lot more skeptical when there's a price tag on it.
Did you experience this directly? Like, you promoted the game upon launch and you got some negative comments or reaction, or was it anything really noticeable like that?
On the premium launch, the response was largely positive, especially in certain Reddit communities like GameMaker, Game Ideas, where the game idea came from, Game Dev and Game Design. But of course, there's a few comments where people are like, $3? I can get like a professionally studio produced game for free. And also,
oh yeah, that's a bit of a ridiculous comparison, I think.
Right. And also, you know, when the game was launched for $3, it received no traction in like the iOS gaming, Android gaming communities on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause those are mostly player oriented communities, whereas the other communities I listed were dev communities.
Sure. So a much more warm atmosphere.
A much more warm atmosphere if your game is free from the players. Whereas devs, I guess they understand.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You know, I kind of feel that with a premium game, I feel the developer has had to put forth a certain amount of effort and consideration into the game to offer it for that price. And if it's some garbage game, which is just not worth anything but being sold for, you know, $3 or $5 or whatever it is, then the reviews will quickly reveal that, I feel. So the review system is pretty functional on the iOS App Store or on Google Play. I mean, if something's really bad, usually you'll be tipped off in that way. And I just also am looking for no in-app purchases. You know, when that is present on Google Play, which is what I use on my phone, that's something that really signals a lot to me. And personally, if a game looks really good to me, I'm happy to pay $2 or $3 for it. I do that routinely. You know, I'd say probably maybe at least, you know, a dozen times a year I'll buy mobile games. And I'm looking for ones that don't have in-app purchases generally. But in some cases, a lot of games are free to play and they'll just have an option, pay $2 or $3 or whatever it is to remove ads or remove paywalls inside the game. I think that's a suitable alternative as well. But in general, I just don't want to be annoyed by ads, especially like video ads, interstitials. Those I find just really so annoying and so cumbersome and inconveniencing that even if the game is really good, I won't play it if it includes those things.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one of my favorite, probably my favorite mobile game is Mario Run.
Right.
$10 mobile game. Like, huge price for a mobile game. Would you consider that free to play?
No. It's basically a shareware. You know, it's like a shareware model of like Wolfenstein 3D or Doom on floppy disks, where you get like the first level for free and then you pay a certain amount to get the full game, which is an interesting gambit, you know, to make in the mobile economy of 2017, which is when I think that game launched. And it seems to have not worked out very well for Mario Run, which I find discouraging since I paid the $9.99 to unlock the game and I don't regret it at all. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But it seems that I'm in the minority. You know, I think that most people were really turned off by that cost and most people rationalized it by saying, well, I could, you know, play a game from a big studio for free and not ever pay $10 to unlock anything. So I think that is sort of a predominant mindset. And that's one of the reasons why Super Mario Run, despite being the first Mario game on mobile, is sort of a parable of, you know, what not to do in terms of monetization structure.
Yeah, if I had to guess, Nintendo probably considers Mario Run to be a failure.
No doubt.
Despite it being a great game.
Right.
So one thing I wanted to start off with was just kind of like some key concepts when we're going to be looking at the data from the 7 days of my initial launch as a premium game to, and then we're going to compare that to the data from the 7 days from my second launch as a free-to-play game. So these data sets, I wanted to introduce the concepts before we dive into the data.
Out of curiosity, did you find a lot of, you know, the situation where the second time you launched the game, you've already kind of found the users who would be most interested in your game? So for example, like your social circle, your friends, your game developer community, etc. I mean, had you'd already exposed them to the game, did you feel the second time launching that you had already sort of exhausted a lot of the low-hanging fruit insofar as users which will obviously be interested?
Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it. I mean, my friends, family, friends of friends, they're willing to pay $3 to try my game. But, you know, you can't rely on that. You need to rely on this gigantic user base of people who've never met you and never heard of you.
Sure.
And those people were far more receptive to the free version of the game.
Interesting. Okay, so what are the terms?
All right, so number one is impressions, which is the total number of views of your store listing. And this includes where your app is viewable and alongside other games. So sometimes you're looking through the app store and you might see a bunch of games that you're scrolling through. Each one of those games is getting an impression. The next one is product page views. So if you're a user and you see a game and you click the icon, or if you followed a direct link to the game's product store page, that's a product page view. The next is conversion rate, and you find this by taking the total number of unique impressions, which means if somebody sees it twice, you only count them once, divided by the number of people who download your game. That's your conversion rate. The next is average revenue per user, which is often shortened to ARPU, A-R-P-U. So you divide the total number of downloads by the total sales, and you get basically what each user is worth in your game. The next one is actually, I introduce it because it's something that we're not going to talk about. It's called the long tail. Are you familiar with the long tail?
Yeah, there's many different ways to look at the long tail.
So the long tail is basically this. If you look at the chart of your game's downloads and revenue, what happens is during launch, you get this big bump. And that bump might last a week, 2 weeks, a few months. But eventually, it goes down and it gets kind of close to zero, at least compared to the initial launch period. You might only be getting, you know, 5% downloads of what you got during the launch week. But that period lasts a lot longer. I mean, your game might be on the App Store, Steam, whatever, for 5 years and continuously just selling, you know, 10 copies every day or 5 copies every day. And that adds up over time. So what we're looking at in this podcast is just the 7-day launch period for these two versions of my game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to really look at kind of the long-term data of the long tail.
Right.
Should I dive into the data?
Yeah, let's go in.
Okay. So starting with the premium version of Carrier Commander, $3. Upon release, 165,000 non-unique users viewed Carrier Commander's listing on the App Store.
And this is within the 7-day period?
Within the 7-day period.
Was there any advertising involved?
I did a lot of promotion on kind of social media, including Reddit.
Okay, so just like organic, you're posting it in places you're not like buying ad space.
No, I've never bought any ad space, so all this is organic. Yeah, so this includes users who merely saw the listing next to other games. During the first 7 days, Carrier Commander claimed the number 8 spot in the category board games, which I think contributed a lot to people seeing it in their organic App Store listing next to kind of top games.
Number 8 by downloads or revenue?
I don't know. It just says number 8 in board games on the App Store.
Oh, probably downloads then.
Probably downloads.
By the way, did you get any good media impressions through the launch of the game? I'm sure you contacted a number of blogs, outlets, YouTubers, things like that. You mentioned the Yo-Yo Games website, which features some. Did you get any kind of good press like that, which gave it a boost?
Well, you know what I discovered is that those people are inundated with just requests to cover my game or everybody's game.
Sure.
So I found the coverage from like blogs and YouTubers to be a little disappointing, especially considering like I reached out to YouTubers that I had worked with previously on paid gaming promotions when I was in the mobile gaming industry. I had hoped they would be a little bit more supportive of indie games, but I think they just get so many requests every day that most of the reviews you see on YouTube, people reviewing games, must either be paid or they're just trying to kind of piggyback off of games that are already successful to drive traffic to their blog or YouTube. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think probably a lot of them are paid or sponsored or whatever.
And so the last thing I want to say about the number of impressions was that Carrier Commander received a lot of attention in the Reddit subcommunities, R Game Maker and R Game Ideas. So these are all kind of the factors for the traffic, because 165,000 impressions is not a small number.
Yeah. Can you track those impressions by source? Like, for example, could you see how many of those came from Reddit or came from another website?
Yes. All that information is available on the App Store developer portal on the back end. I didn't bring it to this podcast, but I can tell you that most of the people were coming from Reddit.
Cool.
So of those who viewed the link, which is 165,000, 2,517 visited the product page. So those are people that clicked the link, right?
Right.
And out of those people, in the first 7 days, 31 people purchased the game for $3.
Is that a significant amount of the traffic on those subreddits? Because I imagine like the Game Maker subreddit, for example, I'm sure it has thousands of subscribers, but it can't be that big. So to have 2,000 people go to the page, is that a pretty good conversion rate, do you think?
I think it's pretty good.
It seems pretty good to me.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I know that on those pages that I was like the top post for 2 days. So I got some visibility.
Nice.
Let's see. So the next data is, the conversion rate. So you go back to unique impressions. 165,000 is actually impressions. So unique impressions is a little less than that.
That's quite a lot. I wonder what you attribute that to. I think maybe ranking in the top 10 in board games. I think that would be my first thought.
Right. Yeah, I guess people that saw it organically on the App Store.
Yeah, people are just browsing these categories all the time. You know, board game fanatics around the world, you know, what have you.
And so that conversion rate is 0.03%. So in other words, out of every 10,000 people who saw my icon in the App Store, 3 people purchased and downloaded the game.
That seems pretty close to average, right? Did you look up what sort of industry standard is for that conversion rate?
For a premium game? No, I'm actually not familiar. I'm more familiar with working in a publishing company where we're advertising the game.
Yeah, the conversion rate for stuff for like impressions is super, super low. The thing is, when people are browsing the App Store, they're sorting through hundreds or thousands of games, and they might click on like one or two of them.
So the average revenue per user is $3, obviously, because it's a premium game. So with 31 downloads, that makes $93 in the first 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the data on the premium game.
Right.
All right, so next to compare, we have...
So easy to see. I mean, you put 2 years into this game. After those results, you probably start thinking, I've got to find another way to do this.
You know, I wasn't totally displeased because although I haven't covered the long tail data, there was a steady stream of people continuously downloading the game going forward. And I did the math and I said, hey, if I sit here and just collect this money for the next 5 years, like, I won't be entirely disappointed. But
well, it's gonna quickly drop way off that list, which granted you all the visibility.
Mm. But even when it, because I did lose the number 8 board game slot pretty quickly. But even after that, I had organic downloads, a couple of them every day. I don't know how they find the game, but they find it. Maybe they type in aircraft carrier because they're interested in that.
They're probably finding the Reddit post. You know, all that stuff's still pretty fresh.
Right. But I had that data for probably 2 months or 2.5 months before I re-released the game as free to play.
Cool.
I guess
how much time was there between launching premium and then launching on free to play? What kind of window are we talking about?
Yeah, I think actually it's probably about 2 months. It was January 22nd when I launched the premium game, and it was March 23rd when I launched the free to play game.
Nice. Okay.
So I guess I could talk just a little bit about the differences, the design differences. How did the game change to become free to play? So luckily, not by design. Not intentionally. The game was already kind of engineered properly for a free-to-play model. And the reason I say this is because the game has persistent variables that last the whole game that, you know, benefit you as a player. Whereas if you think of a game that only had like mini battles and then each battle was like a encapsulated thing, why would you buy something that you can only use for one battle, right?
Right.
So my game has resources that last the whole game, which made it very easy to adapt to free-to-play. So what I did to change the model was I introduced one variable called mission credits, which limited the number of times you could play the missions. And when you ran out of mission credits, you could watch a video and get 3 more. And every time you watch the video, it says, hey, do you want to stop watching these videos? And the second thing I did was I introduced this thing called the scrap factory. And basically, at the end of every battle, you get this resource called scrap. So in the premium version, you got all your scrap. But in the free-to-play version, half of the scrap went into the scrap factory. So as you're playing through the game, and you do a little grinding so you can beat the levels, you're watching half of everything you earn go into this kind of bank account that you have no access to, which the more you play, the more valuable that seems. So that came with the what's called full game unlock, which sold for $5. So now my game's free. Comes with video ads, rewarded video ads, and a full game unlock, which gives you no ads and gives you the scrap factory for $5. That's the second version.
I see. So the price actually went up.
Right. Yeah, the price went up to account for the all the free users.
Right.
So upon the release of the free-to-play version, Carrier Commander listing was viewed 8,000 times on the store. The product page was visited...
Impressions, you mean 8,000?
Impressions, yes. Mm-hmm. The product page was visited about 4,500 times.
Whoa, that conversion rate went way up.
Went way up. And the game was installed about 1,500 times. It's a 1,400, 20, 30 something. So the conversion rate raised to about 23%. So to compare, it was 0.03% before. Now it's 23%. One piece of data that is not included with that is the in-app purchases. So during that first week, there were 10 in-app purchases, and some of the players went on to make in-app purchases in the future. But I'm not including that data because it's impossible for me to track the kind of initial 7-day cohort of players to see when they made in-app purchases. So we'll just say 10.
I'm going to make an assumption here, but I think it's a pretty safe one that by the time you launch the second time, you already had a collection of positive reviews, which may have also had a dramatic impact on the conversion rate.
Sure. Yeah, that probably helped. My game's...
I assume it's a high average.
It's 5 stars right now.
Right.
So the average revenue per user is 3 cents. Every player in my game is worth 3 cents. And with 1,500 users, that means in the first 7 days, the game made $50. So that's kind of the two data sets.
So yeah, on one hand, you have almost no installs and about $100. Mm. And on the other hand, you have thousands of users and still a pretty meager amount of money. But you got to think how much data, how much information you have through having thousands of users and how valuable that really is in terms of adjusting the game to monetize better or using that intelligence to develop a more effective game. It seems like a really valuable trade-off.
Yeah, actually, because the App Store also tracks retention, but only for opt-in users, so it's limited. And when it was premium, there was just not enough data to track retention. But when it went free-to-play, I got to see what my retention numbers were. And they basically were exactly the same as the kind of strategy game benchmarks that are typical, like day one retention, 30%. Day two retention, 15%. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I do remember comparing them to the strategy game average.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty good.
Do you have daily rewards and all those types of retention gambits?
No, I hate that crap.
Yeah, I hate it too. You know, it's part of the real difficulty, I think, of working in mobile games, in mobile game design in particular. This is not that much to do with publishing, but you have to acknowledge that a lot of things which you might not like personally are very effective.
Mm.
It's difficult to incorporate things which you yourself don't like because you have to acknowledge that they really do work. And I think the daily rewards is one of those things.
You know, one of those things that I hate that is the most effective is like ridiculously expensive in-app purchases, like selling gems for $50.
Yeah.
Because I think that's just...
Like anchoring?
Yeah, it just seems absurd to me. Who would pay $50 for a little mobile game? But when I
that's actually, the point, you know.
But some people do, and you
some
know,
people do. But it's the real intention of that is not because a significant number of people are going to purchase that, unless it's like a competitive online multiplayer game. In which case, you know, if you have a user base of millions of people, then the small percentage of people who are going to make that purchase becomes very lucrative. But it's also for the psychological principle of anchoring. You know, most people will see that $50 or $100 purchase and they'll think that's ludicrous. But by comparison, you know, $5 seems pretty reasonable.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So planting that seed of for, you know, comparative purposes is pretty effective. You know, you see this in retail as well. You know, I mean, like with clothing shops or, I mean, if you have like an absurdly expensive alternative, it makes the lesser cost items seem a lot more attractive because psychologically you're comparing them. And, you know, if you didn't have the $50 purchase, maybe a $10 purchase would look ludicrous, you know, but with it, it looks reasonable.
So that sounds really smart, but, you know,
evil.
It's a little evil too. Manipulative. Yeah. Maybe.
Manipulative. Exactly. Right. Evil is probably going a little far. Manipulative for sure. But I mean, so many of these practices, which are common in the mobile games industry, are just downright manipulative, you know, but it really works. I'm curious to find what kind of information you gather now that you have thousands of users playing your game on a regular basis. there are so many interesting insights to be had from that. You know, I mean, when people stop playing, when people get back into the game, which actions they take, what are the things which drive them away? What are the things which keep them playing for the longest period of time? You know, there's so many different data points to collect.
Right. Yeah. One thing I notice is the players drop off and then they come back later. Because of the I didn't build any kind of like user tracking or analytics, but some of that stuff is built in anyway. So because I have ads from Google AdMob, I can basically see how many people are playing my game every day, because every time you open my game, it requests a video download from Google AdMob.
Right.
And Google tracks that in the background.
Yep.
So yeah, that data is great. The retention data is great. One comment I had about what you were saying about anchoring is a lot of players told me online and in person that when they're downloading a free-to-play game, the App Store has added like a list of in-app purchases on the side. So a lot of players check that.
Right.
And if they see like crazy priced ones, they just won't download the game.
Sure. I love that. I love that people do that. I love that that's a thing. You know, I think that Apple has kind of played around with concealing that list. So it's been like available, it's been revealed at certain points and sort of concealed and not available. I think having that available, having all the in-app purchases, you know, up for view, up for evaluation before you download the game, I consider that to be a crucial feature for an app store to offer. Because I'm always looking at that myself, because obviously if you see like a $99 purchase, that's just a clear like red flag for a manipulative developer. And that's the type of thing which will, in almost all cases, prevent me from downloading a game at all, unless I want to download it for, you know, it's like Clash Royale and I want to download it for, you know, purposes of understanding what it's doing and why it's so popular or something like that.
So kind of to sum it all up, my conclusions that I've formed from this data, free-to-play is better. Not only does it allow your game to reach exponentially more players, but also with well-designed in-app purchases, the profitability is just much higher. And I think the rationale behind this should be pretty obvious to anyone that plays mobile games. First one is that there's a lot of good free options available. So why would a player pay for a game?
Yeah.
The second one is once a player has played your game, tried your game, they like your game, they're far more willing to pay a little money into it.
Right.
And the third one is that unlike premium games, free-to-play games are sticky. So what I mean by that is if a player rejects the purchase of my premium game, they go on with their life and they completely forget about me. But in a free-to-play game, you know, a free player will download the game and maybe he's not a paying customer yet, but he's going to go back to the game. He's going to have that icon on his phone. And eventually, you might be able to convert your free customers to paying customers.
Right. It could be in a month or a year or, you know, any time period, but the app is always going to be there. It's always going to be a few seconds away. And that type of convenience really counts for a lot.
And the final thing I kind of wanted to introduce was, this is an extrapolation. It's not real science, but if we just took the kind of free-to-play launch numbers and we apply them to the initial premium launch, we could see how much money I left on the table by not launching as a free-to-play game the first go-around.
Right.
Okay, so there's 160,000 total impressions.
Yeah, because I mean, the first go-around is kind of really the only launch. I mean, the second one is kind of, you know, not really a launch entirely, but it's sort of a re-release of sorts with a different business model. But calling it a launch is kind of a euphemism.
Right. And that's why the first launch had so many more impressions, right?
Sure, of course.
So if we take that 160,000 total impressions and we apply the 22% conversion rate, then what we get is 35,000 downloads.
Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't be exactly that number, but might be a ballpark.
Reasonable to extrapolate.
And with my average revenue per user of 3 cents times 35,000 users, that first week would have made about $1,000.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at, if you remember, the first week made, I think, 93, is about 10 times more profitable to release your game as a free-to-play game than a premium game.
Yeah.
Or at least that was my experience.
Quite dramatic demonstration of the two business models there. You know, have you considered that you could just bombard your current users with push notifications that saying, you know, their waters are being invaded or so, Commander, you're needed now. Like, have you thought about doing that? I mean, that's something, obviously I'm just joking about the wording of that, but a lot of free-to-play developers do use push notifications in that way to bring people back into the game or to make special offers available, or you know, there's a million different tricks like that to boost retention.
You know, I budged. I moved from my standard of premium to free-to-play, and that's about as far as I was willing to budge. So, you know, I don't, these like annoying, I hate when a game like messages me.
Yeah.
It's so obvious what they're doing. I hate that. So I'm not going to do that.
You know, I think the circumstances depend a little bit. In general, it's like a clear retention ploy. And what you risk is people just turning off the notifications for your game as soon as they get a feeling that they're being annoyed or, you know, inconvenienced in any way. But there are, I mean, once you're free to play and you have those users who have installed the app on their device, then you have a pretty comprehensive set of tools available to control control those criteria.
Right.
I guess the question is what you're willing to do and what you're not.
That is not on the, that's not on the plan, the roadmap.
That's good. You're principled. So what is on the roadmap? Is anything on the roadmap?
Yep. We've got two more things and then I'm ready to move on to my second game.
What you got?
So the Google version is still premium. I'm going to do a third launch as a Google free-to-play game.
Okay.
Those Android users love free games.
You know what? I mean, Android as a platform in general is one that is even more averse to upfront payments than the iOS App Store. There are a lot of notable examples of App Store games which are available at a premium upfront cost, which don't even dare to even attempt that on Android. The average revenue per user on iOS is just so much higher than on Android.
I think it's 10 times higher or something.
Yeah.
It might be even be higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a little bit of sense when you consider the different demographics between the two markets. So with the iOS App Store, everyone using that with a phone obviously is on an iPhone. iPhone is the only device which can access the iOS App Store. iPhone, even if you buy a used one, you're looking at probably like $500 or $600, you know, entry level price, like for an iPhone, which makes it a really premium device as far as smartphones go. If you go into like a T-Mobile store or AT&T in the United States, you can get an Android device for well under $100. And those are the ones which are selling in really large quantities. So you consider someone who spends, you know, $100 on an inexpensive like Huawei smartphone or something, or in China as well, you know, where you can get phones for 300 RMB, which is around $50. People like that are much less likely to spend, you know, $2, $3, $5 on an app. Those people are just going to download free apps. And so the Android marketplace really reflects this. I mean, whether you're looking at Google Play, which is for basically United States and Europe, or if you look at other app stores in China, there's like, you know, the Baidu app store, and there's a whole different, you know, complicated landscape of different app stores. But generally speaking, I would say well over 90% of all apps are free. And apps which would otherwise cost an upfront cost are, you know, free to play or free download with the purchase happening inside the app.
Yeah, I saw an infographic that covered, it was the top 100 mobile developers, 90% of their revenue came from their iOS user base and 10% of their revenue came from their Android user base. So that shows you the kind of differing value of an iOS player and an Android player.
Yeah, this is why, I mean, one of the reasons why I think the iOS App Store is, you know, superior to Google Play. Not only because developers just put so much more time and attention into the iOS versions of their apps, because those are the ones which tend to monetize best. And in many people's minds, for better or worse, iPhone is the flagship smartphone. So many big companies consider the iPhone version to be like the flagship, you know, version of their product, whether they're Facebook or Twitter or WordPress or, you know, any major, you know, digital technology company nowadays.
So the second and final item left on my roadmap is, I think it's kind of cool. It came from something I hadn't planned on in the beginning. It just kind of organically grew. when the first players beat my game, the game said, like, you win, and that was it. And the players messaged me, and they said, that's not enough. I need to be rewarded with something.
Yep.
So I went in the game, and I kind of installed this, like, tracking of the user's player behavior. Things like how many ships they lost, how many battles they lost, that kind of stuff. So now when you beat the game, it gives you this kind of like stat report of everything that happened in your war.
Cool.
So the next step for that is I've been doing research on kind of strategic personality. Things like risk averse versus risk taker, perceptiveness, offensive, defensive. And I've been trying to apply the data that the game gathers about the user to form a strategic personality profile report that the shares with the user. As you play through the game, it will kind of reveal its assessment of your strategic ability and personality.
So you're a risk taker if you died more times, or you're risk averse if you suffered fewer losses, that type of thing?
Yeah. It measures things like, is the player being defensive or is the player being more offensive? Perceptiveness measures like how quickly they learn new concepts in the beginning. You know, there might be a level that's really easy once you figure it out. But, you know, did you spend 10 minutes to figure it out, or did you figure it out right away?
Right. And there's probably a positive way to frame all these different outcomes. Like if you can solve a stage on your first shot, you're ingenious. Or if it takes you 10 shots, you're persistent.
I like that. Yeah, it's always great to tell someone something positive.
Right.
I remember I got a screenshot from what I described earlier. You know, you get the report at the end of the game. And it's my friend. He'd been playing, bless his heart, he'd been spent so many hours to beat the game on hard mode. And it said, like, at the very end of the game, his final reward, it says, performance, not satisfactory.
you should say, bless your heart.
Yeah, bless your heart.
That'd be good, a friendly way to acknowledge a great quantity of deaths.
So I thought this kind of like strategic personality profile report would just be a cool thing to share with the players, and also might increase the game's K factor a little bit.
Sure.
People want to share, you know.
K factor virality.
Virality.
That's a good one. Well, thank you for sharing your story. I'm glad to hear that you were able to pivot so successfully and so quickly after launching the game the first time. Pretty cool to hear about all the data and your insights on how these two different launches went so differently. I think your recommendation is pretty clear, which is to head for the free-to-play option given the two choices if you are an independent developer who's making a mobile game.
Right, definitely.
Did you publish any information on this on your blog? I want to give a plug to your blog.
Yeah, so all of these podcasts are on the blog, as well as the Chengdu Gaming Federation site. And all this data that I've just gone over actually has like a text blog post where you can explore it if you want. You can explore the data on my blog from gametobrain.com.
Great. Thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks.